Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Deter, disrupt, or deceived? Assessing cyber conflict as an intelligence contest. The idea of cyber war has played a dominant role in both academic and popular discourse, concerning the nature of statecraft in the cyber domain. It is a new book, a new study by Robert Chesney and Max Smeets. Delighted to be joining me live on the line. The author of Disrupt, or one of the authors of, or the editors of Disrupt, Deter, Disrupt, or Deceive, which sounds like me every Monday morning on this radio show. Good morning to you, Max.
Good morning, Giles. Thanks for having me. It's a mouthful, right? Deter, Disrupt, or Deceive. But it's the three Ds.
I want it on a t-shirt. I think that would be brilliant, actually. And I think I may go with that as an early Christmas present to myself. Now, we have obviously in the past, we've known about cyberspace ever since, Neuromancer, the book was written in 30 years ago now. But in the past 10 years, cyberspace has come to reality and rather than a science fiction.
Yeah, that's true. And it has come to reality in a number of different ways. And what we try to do in this book is really understand what all of this means. And let me actually take you back on how this project started. So we started this book with a really terrific group of collaborators. So we have over 14 authors as part of this book. And we started this in the before times. So prior to the outbreak of the corona pandemic, in 2018, because that's when the U.S. government published a new strategy. And they called, the U.S. Cyber Command called this persistent engagement. And the U.S. Department of Defense used these terms, defending forward. These were terms that people tried to understand. And many were a bit worried about what the implications would be of a U.S. Cyber Command strategy, the military that was becoming more active in cyberspace. And so we brought lots of people together and we just started to discuss what it meant with the U.S. as basically in the Frank Sinatra terms of the song previously was doing it their way. And they were sort of, people were quite unsure about what the implications would be. And what we tried to do is started to conceptualize the nature of activity from different governments. And there has always been this talk about, as you mentioned, cyber war, the next cyber war. And we saw an attack. And it's like, okay, we'll see the next thing will not be a nuclear war, but a cyber war. And this book, started to be a bit more nuanced about the best ways to conceptualize it. And we started to look particularly through cyber conflict through the intelligence lens.
Of course, one of the things is we talk about cyber war and that, all out attacks and everything being crippled. But as you say, the nuances are, it's more likely to be more of a, if it's a guerrilla war with various little bits taken down, rather than an attack that wipes out, because it wipes out an entire network, somebody's, you know, entire phone system goes down, somebody's entire health system goes down. What we've seen are these little probes, if you like, that have cropped up.
That's a really, yeah, nice way to say it. Some people will say cyberspace is always on. There is always activity taking place, whether this is a ransomware attack or whether this is a website being disrupted or whether this is information stolen from a database. But indeed, what we don't see very often are these major attacks that cripple critical infrastructure. It doesn't mean that it not necessarily can never happen in the future, but these type of activities are much less likely to happen. And as these are much less likely to happen, it doesn't mean that all of this other activity that we see is not important. So we shouldn't simply ignore this, but we should really try to understand what it entails and how states have to respond to it. And people in this book have very different ideas about it. Some will say that the scope and scale, even of these small incidents combined, leads to a completely new thing, an evolution, not just an evolution, but a revolution in affairs. And we have to come up with new ways to understand it and new concepts to understand it as well. Others will say, essentially, this is what we've always seen. This is similar tactics than what we saw in the Cold War between intelligence agencies doing sabotage, similar thing that we saw, in fact, going back many centuries ago between kingdoms as well.
Of course, one of the things is, you know, we saw this lot of hand wringing from certain segments of society that, oh, the US military is going to get involved in cyberspace and that's going to bring everything, you know, it's Big Brother. But of course, that's because, to all intents and purposes, and that's another argument, we're living in a democracy in the West. But of course, in other more restrictive societies, you know, they have been doing this, as it turns out, for 20 years. So if you like, the organizations, the governments in particularly China, which is everybody's favorite cyber bogeyman, and Russia, which seems to be their bumbling second cousin cyber-wise, they have been doing this whilst those in the West have been debating whether they should be doing it.
Yeah, in some ways that's very true. We must admit that certainly the US intelligence services have been involved already, so at least from the 90s, but perhaps earlier. But yeah, as you say, the bogeyman, we see sort of four. We have China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran. Those are the four, the big four that are often being pointed out. And they're using cyberspace in different ways, right? They're not all behaving alike. Russia is doing a lot of what we call cyber-enabled disinformation. So that means that they're first trying to get access to maybe some information that is in a database in the US, and then mix this with some of their own disinfo-related campaigns, and then spread the word around this. They also are sometimes doing what we call a lot of disruptive activity. And then China has been very active, mostly in stealing governments and private secrets from the private sector, often what we call involved in IP theft. Iran and North Korea perhaps behave slightly differently too. North Korea has been very active in actually trying to gain money from some of their cyber operations. So a terrific other book has been written, The Lazarus Heist, which I highly recommend, about all the cryptocurrency exchanges that the North Koreans have hacked to earn millions and millions of dollars. And Iran is a fourth one that sort of stands out for its audacity in targeting a wide range of actors in the region. One of them was Saudi Aramco a couple of years ago, where quite a few workstations were destroyed.
It's an interesting one as well, because in this, and I know you're going to crush your eyes about this and beat your head against the disc, in this cyber war in which we are, but we are all engaged in this. And here comes a crashing cliche, Max, so hang on, because we are all in the front line of this cyber war, although we may not know it, because you mentioned the two or three things there. One of them is the fact that Russia uses deception and disinformation, and it has become an expert on this, because obviously if people like myself have our doubts about Russian influence on the elections of Trump and the Brexit campaign, and I'm sorry to drop the Brexit word in Europe on a Monday morning, but therefore, you know, we are all getting this information And it doesn't, a cyber conflict doesn't necessarily seem, oh, my mobile laptop doesn't work. It's inside the minds of the people who are reading this, the information coming to them via cyberspace.
Absolutely. And you can see this at multiple levels, right? It might be you not trusting your own device anymore. But you can see this in more extreme cases as well. Can you imagine that a military operator doesn't trust their radar system anymore? Even if it hasn't been tinkered with, it might still have severe implications of what it would do in their follow-on steps. So indeed, this mind game is a crucial component of cyber contest. And as a result of that, this is also something that the people discuss in the book. You know, but that's a mind game that has been there for a long, long time. Is that really new? You know, sure, we now may do this a little bit more through cyber means, but mind games have been there essentially forever.
And even in today's newspapers in the UK, they're saying, well, we're a bit worried about this because China is going to give the UK 300,000 electric cars, but there could be a guy in Beijing with a button that says stop. And they're talking, I mean, even the newspapers are using terms like Trojan horse as if, you know, a basic distrust of China, even though we're importing that technology. But there's that thinking at the back of my head that there could be something in the Chinese cars that could muck up our systems.
Yeah, so what we often think about when we think about cyber attacks, it's to get access to someone's computer system in an unauthorized way, right? So I find a way to maybe send you a phishing email, and that gives me then access, and then I can do cool things. Or I might exploit what we call a vulnerability. But there is another way in which you can get access, and that's simply when you have developed the very system that this person is working on. And of course, that is the debate that we see in the case of China, where they may put in backdoors into the very equipment that we're using, and through that get a wide range of access to our either mobile devices or something else. Again, this might not be unique to China. It's one what we call in shaping the space, shaping the environment. It's something that, of course, many other countries may do as well. The U.S. might benefit equally from lots of people using Cisco routers, a U.S.-based company, because simply their connection with Cisco is a little bit better than with a Chinese company like Huawei.
So how does the famous Huawei? So how? Because I was just going to say, how does a politician, and I use the word advisedly, a statesman, then how does that affect international relations between countries? Because you mentioned Huawei and the way that the states sort of shut down on that and wanted to shut down on TikTok because it's Chinese, because it's a Chinese system, etc. Do our present generation of politicians, diplomats, call them what you will, do they know enough about this to form? Because this is because we have grown used to an aggressive foreign policy from a nation being a missile fired over your country. You know, good morning, North Korea again. Or tanks rumbling across the border. This is more insidious. This is more subtle. And you mentioned the word nuance, but do politicians need a crash course then in cyber diplomacy?
Well, what is the case here is like one of interdependence. But this interdependence has started already often many decades ago. And it's indeed extremely complex. One supply chain issue here, one supply chain issue there. I may rely on your software. You may rely on my hardware. You may rely on one protocol that I wrote. And I may rely on a protocol that you wrote. And so on. It's like this very intricate web of relationship where realistically, it's very hard to, at this stage, completely disentangle them. So you sort of have a feeling that at most what you can do is leverage the dependence that you have and that they have on you to your advantage. And thinking about the most critical things of ensuring that those are at least independent. But that's extremely hard. Let me give you one example that very few people think about. We've heard much about like Huawei and critical infrastructure and 5G. We have heard about TikTok and not downloading the app. But think about something like gaming apps. You know, there are many gaming apps, perhaps even the majority in the world, that are developed by a Chinese software manufacturer. They are installed on a lot of mobile devices, from kids to adults. And a lot of data is going through these gaming apps. Now, should you then say no one is allowed to install a gaming app that is has a Chinese software manufacturer? It's a really tough one because it hits, it affects billions of people, and it seems rather innocent. So drawing the line becomes extremely difficult for politicians and for the public alike.
So why the book now? Why did you decide, and when did you start? Because this is, you know, this, as you said, 14 different editors, authors, and as a former magazine editor myself, I know how difficult that is to control, and that's just articles, never mind these reports. So what was the starting point for Deter, Disrupt or Deceive?
The starting point was really the disagreement that exists currently in the both academic and policy space of how we have to understand this domain. And that started with these disagreements around the US Cyber Command strategy in 2018. And some will say, oh, this space has become militarized. We now see the militaries becoming more active in a space that was always owned by the intelligence agencies. So there was that element where we wanted to showcase differences in debate on the way in which different entities are getting involved and what they are supposed to do here. The second is that we noticed that there were differences between countries. So what this book has is quite unique. It has a UK perspective, but it also has a Chinese perspective from a former PLA officer and a Russian perspective. And we showcase how these different countries actually look at this activity. And that's important because if UK and China have a very different understanding of the same type of activity that is going on. One is saying, ah, no, this is just age-old intelligence stuff. You know, we don't have to worry about it. It's not escalatory. And the other one will say, well, this is fundamentally new. You're conducting a cyber war against us. It might have real implications of how policymakers have to talk to each other to potentially establish new norms, international law, or avoid escalation.
Yeah, that was going to be the next question. Having just heard what they're saying, in your view, what might seem like normal cyber activity from a PLA, from the People's Liberation Army, might seem like just having a random probe to see what's out there, might from another nation be seen as a full out attack on their system. So how do we sleep better at night, Max? We were already getting worried about various things going on, if you like, in the real world, and I use that term advisedly. So how can we, you know, should we be even more concerned about the possibility of things being misunderstood in the cyber world?
I think there are greater opportunities for misunderstanding indeed. And indeed, that is one of the key things for this book, is to explain these differences, to make first clear to the reader how they are differently understood. What, you know, how Russia, for instance, doesn't distinguish between cyber and misinformation or disinformation. It's all part of the same thing. Whereas in the West, we often say, you know, one is a cyber element and it's hacking, and the other one is information, and that's a very different thing. And so by clarifying the differences in understanding between different governments, hopefully we can reduce some of this misunderstanding, particularly as we may move into conflicts. And above all, because these conflicts may not always take place between two countries. It might be that you observe some activity and you first don't even know whether this is Chinese or Russian, or whether this is a Russian operation that is doing as if they're a Chinese operation. So it quickly can become very, very fuzzy.
It makes you long for the old days of people on boats with flags on, doesn't it, Max? Let's you know. Then you could tell if it was a government attack, because it would have the national flag, and if it was a hacker, it'd have a pirate flag on it. That was because they see themselves as the descendants of the pirates.
Absolutely, and we've seen one fascinating case of a so-called false flag operation, where we saw during the Olympics in South Korea a major cyber attack that influenced their Wi-Fi system just before the ceremony. And when people started to analyze the code, they thought, hey, these are the North Koreans. This is a operation, perhaps, symbolically. And then some came quickly out and said, yeah, you know, this is a problematic thing that happens in the region. As people started to later analyze the code, they noticed actually something weird is going on. It's more likely that this is an operation by the Russian government, potentially protesting against some Russian athletes being unable to participate due to doping-related issues or something else going on. But it took some time to figure that out, that it was likely not North Korea, but Russia. And so you can see in the height of the conflict, where you don't have days to analyze code, but you have to act within hours, it can be very problematic.
Oof, good grief. Well, the book is called Deter, Disrupt or Deceive, Assessing Cyber Conflict as an Intelligence Contest. It's by Robert Chesney and Max Smeets, who Amy Zagard wrote the future, wrote the forward, and Max Smeets, who we've been talking to today. Max, if people want to find you online under their own pseudonyms, you know, without where can, I mean, you do the internet, Max, which is a silly question.
I am still on Twitter, so I haven't moved away from Twitter yet, at Max W. Smeets. I have now moved. I'm trying out Blue Sky as well. I'm not sure if Talk Radio Europe is already on Blue Sky.
What is blue? The only thing blue, Max, at the moment is my T-shirt. What is Blue Sky for our listeners?
So Blue is a new social media platform that was developed or is established by a couple of former Twitter developers as well, and received a good amount of venture capital funding. It's still in its prototype stage, but essentially the moment you get on it, you will feel a very similar feel to the early days of Twitter. And we'll see how it evolves over time. They still have to add a number of features to it, like direct messages doesn't exist yet. I like it a little bit more than, for instance, an alternative platform such as Mastodon, a more decentralized server system, because it's easier to find people. So who knows if it develops further. For now, you can still find me on Twitter.
Indeed. Max, thank you for that. Thank you for that tip on new technology. This book is called, and I do want to get, please get some T-shirts made, because I'll buy one. With Deter, Disrupt or Deceive, Assessing Cyber Conflict as an Intelligence Contest. Max, it's been a real pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you. And if I'll make the T-shirts, I will make sure to send you one.
Thank you. Large, thanks very much. Max Smeets, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.